previously on Podcast Without Pretense.
You know, guys, as soon as I get back from vacation, we'll be right back on track.
I can't believe we've completed over 3,000 episodes, but only like, I think 100 of them have made it online, right?
Yeah, I mean, Memorial Day, I mean, was fine, but it wasn't, you know, nothing big.
Nothing memorable. Hi, I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I am Ayaz Akhtar.
I'm Eric Sandine.
And together, we form the hosts of the best new podcast of 2017.
Should we get that URL?
No. Wait, no, it was best podcast of 2017.
It was no, best, we were podcast, best of podcast of 2014,
but we're the best new podcast of 2017.
Oh, no.
I like that idea.
We're constantly reinventing ourselves. It's important for a show to stay fresh. So guys, it has been a little while since we've done one of these things. How are you?
I'm terrific. How about you, Eric? You look like you're in a new place.
I'm good. Yeah, I moved since like a while ago.
Oh, geez.
That's nice. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't a while ago, but yeah.
I have not moved. I've redecorated a bit. As you can see, I'm basically in a cave of darkness, as I normally am.
Yeah.
And I got to start the show late, really, because I decided to bring back my old Mac Pro that's been sitting in a box for months. I'm like, hey, look, I'm going to try some new stuff. And I should have tested it out much earlier because it took me 15 minutes to properly get online because the version of Chrome I had was Chrome version 49, which does not support anything, including Gmail, because Gmail is like, Gmail does not support this. Get a new browser. So I'm like, keen. So basically everybody's been in this. Well, I've been in a stasis because of this machine. How about you, Jonathan? I've heard you've been having fun. You've been rocking out, or is it Stones?
Yeah, I haven't been rocking out or Stones recently, but the last time I had Stones would have been 12 years ago, but.
Oh, I thought it was a recent development.
Oh, no. We were, before we started talking about the podcast, we were joking around about OxyContin and the horrible opioid addiction crisis, as you do. And I had mentioned that I have actually been prescribed OxyContin in the past as a painkiller in the wake of kidney stones, but it was quite some time ago. It was, however, back in the day when you would go into the pharmacy, you would turn in your prescription, and they would give you enough OxyContin to kill a football team. It was ridiculous how many pills they gave me. And I should add, post passing a kidney stone, I had maybe a day of uncomfortable pain. Not like the intense pain came before the passing of the kidney stone, which happened while I was in the hospital. So it was way too much. It was insane overkill. And it honestly was when the whole opioid crisis thing started to unfold and the stories started to develop, as I was listening to it, I was like, well, no shit. I mean, I didn't need nearly that kind of painkiller, and that's what I got. Now, granted, in my case, I ended up disposing of it before any of my ne'er-do-well actor friends got ideas and decided to break into my house and steal it.
Well, I'm taking notes, by the way. It says Jonathan had stones 12 years ago, which is good.
Yeah.
Because we can use this information for later. And if anybody's watching this live and they're like, hey, wait a minute. One of these guys going to talk about movies. Have you guys seen It?
Yeah.
I have. Oh, do you mean the 1990 miniseries? Of course. Tim Curry was great. Everyone else was
shit.
I haven't
seen it.
So you haven't
seen
the
Wonder Woman.
Oh, wow. Eric, up to date on his films. Seeing Wonder Woman.
So one of the benefits of the new house is we live by, I'm two blocks from a movie theater. But they don't show like brand new movies. They show indie movies and like second runish. So
I
have a great incentive to go see movies now, but they're going to be older or really weird indie movies.
I wish I had.
I did see Baby Driver.
Baby Driver's good. Baby Driver's good.
Yeah, that was awesome.
You can actually see my house in Baby Driver.
Yeah. Right. That's right. It was in Atlanta. Yeah.
There's a sequence in Baby Driver. It's Eric, if you remember, it's when the group the crew is driving into the old rail yard in order to meet with the butcher.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Played by Paul Williams. In the shot where they're driving into this compound, in the background of that shot, you see my house. It's like a blink and you miss it kind of moment. It lasts for maybe 2-3 seconds. But I very much enjoyed the movie. I love seeing Atlanta in a film. The geography of Atlanta, just like any other movie set anywhere, the geography is all sort of janked up. Yeah.
There's like streets me watching that don't... Breaking Bad. It's like, no, that doesn't make any sense. Where are you going?
Yeah, streets that don't connect are adjacent in the film. I mean, that's movie magic. You understand it. You let it go. But like everyone I chat to is like, yeah, that is not where Octane Coffee is. There is an Octane Coffee in Atlanta, but it's not. It's actually there are a couple, but neither of them are in that section of Atlanta. But it was a lot of fun to see those locations and, you know, to actually have Atlanta be the setting. It's not just that it was filmed in Atlanta, but that it actually is set in that city. And, you know, especially when you find out that Edgar Wright originally did not set it in Atlanta. It wasn't meant to be in Atlanta. But then when he got booked for Pinewood Studios, he got booked for the Pinewood in Atlanta, not the one in London. And he ended up reworking the screenplay to localize it here. And so everyone in my town who saw it loved it because it felt like a real love letter to the city that we live in. So that was kind of fun. Mm-hmm. And so the music in that is great.
When he did the the music's amazing. Yeah. Ayaz, when are we going to talk about movies? Or
I was going to say, as you can tell, we have not watched the same movie at all over the past 85 months. any of the same movies we were supposed to watch. I think Zombies, was that the movie that Jonathan picked last?
Zombies by the Asylum was the movie I picked. And I think I'm the only one who has watched any of it up to this point. And I watched about probably 20 or 30 minutes of it. It is, tell you what, guys, if you like, because it's been so long, I'm willing to call it a loss and move on to the next person's pick for the next show, because it's an asylum movie and nothing about it will surprise you. It is just like all other asylum movies. It's that incredibly lazy, mediocre approach to filmmaking where it's bad, but not in a way that's bad enough to be really entertaining. It's trying too hard to be schlock. And so it just doesn't come across as anything other than tiresome. So I'm willing to just bite that one and say, let's scrap it. It's not even worth talking about, and have someone pick a different movie for next week. If you guys want. If you want to watch it, we totally can.
I can be good without Zombies.
Yeah. I wanted it to be campy. And it just isn't quite campy enough. It's just dumb and not in a fun way.
Yeah. I'm fine skipping any asylum film.
Okay.
That's fine.
Let's do it. Then I don't know whose turn it is next because I don't remember who I followed. I want to say I followed Ayaz, but
that's probably
I can't remember.
I think it's Eric's turn. And if it's not Eric's turn, we'll just say it's Eric's turn. This is how often we do this program, that we don't remember the order in which we pick the movies.
Yeah.
So if you know, let us know on Twitter at PWP.
I already have my movie picked out. So
awesome. So what is your movie, just so that we know right now?
Oh, it's definitely Three-Headed Shark Attack.
Oh, God. I saw that on the Netflix the other day. I mean, I didn't watch it, but I saw that it was on Netflix. Because I was like, Two-Headed Shark Attack wasn't a dumb enough idea. Now there's a fucking three-headed shark attack. All right, I'm going to go ahead and add that before I forget.
It's got Danny Trejo and Rob Van Dam. I assume that is he is related, possibly.
No, Rob Van Dam is a wrestler. You don't know him?
Is he?
Yeah.
I don't know him, no. Damn. Oh, yeah, he definitely looks like a wrestler. Yep.
Rob Van Dam was a wrestler. He made his name really in ECW. ECW was eventually acquired by the WWE. He ended up moving over to the WWE. He was very popular there. Apparently was a little bit of a dick backstage and never really got a big push. Part of that is because he's not a huge guy. He was very talented, but he's not a big guy. Also, somewhat of a proponent of the ganja.
Yeah, well, that's not such a bad... it's not a bad thing in and of itself. The thing was that they made him WWE champion, and then he gets caught driving under the influence, and he's high out of his mind, or at least high enough that he gets arrested. So they're like, shit, we just made this guy champion last week. It's Wednesday. Yeah. We have to, and then they find a way to make him lose. He actually had two different belts at the same time. They had to drop both within a week because they gave him a shot. And but he's still quite liked in the wrestling circles, from what I understand. And he's still a decent wrestler because he's still out there.
This is Hacksaw Jim Duggan all over again.
Well, yeah, but back then it wasn't. And I was like, why is Jim Duggan in the same car as Iron Sheik? This can't be. These reports must
also
be wrong.
Also, to be fair, Jim, back in those days, the WWF at that time was not a publicly traded company, and so people got away with shit all the time because there were no shareholders to answer to except for the people who actually owned the fucking promotion, and as long as they didn't care, you were good. And now they're being a publicly traded company, they have a certain level of propriety they're supposed to meet, and in order to not make shareholders nervous. And although you could argue if you were letting people run wild and as a result the ratings were going crazy, shareholders would be like, let's fucking allow that to happen. So it's not pretty. The whole wrestling business is incredibly fascinating and ugly in many ways. And exploitive. And again, it comes from the old carnival days, and that was not known for great human resources.
Yeah, speaking of human resources, I'm really glad as I searched for this movie, Three-Headed Shark, one of the movies that comes up is White Chicks, which I don't know where that word fits in exactly, but apparently it does bring up White Chicks. So I'm really glad you didn't pick that, because I don't want to watch that.
It's too mainstream of release. That actually got mainstream film release way back in the day.
Yes, but I don't want to watch it. I have neither no desire to watch this film.
I can tell you something I did watch on Netflix. So I went down, you know, when I'm sitting by myself, whenever my wife's out of town or she's, you know, off running errands or whatever, I often like to watch horror movies. Becca doesn't, she's not crazy about horror movies, and I really enjoy them. The problem is there are very few horror movies that I have not seen that are also worth watching on any of the services I subscribe to at this point. Like most of the ones are, you know, essentially the equivalent of direct to video style horror movies. And I started one called Dead Awake. And the premise is that they're these twin sisters. They're both played by the same actress. And one of them is being plagued by bouts of sleep paralysis and awful, awful, awful nightmares. And this is something that's, you know, really well documented in psychology, not necessarily understood, but documented, this effect that certain people have or certain people experience, this scenario that people experience where they are mentally awake, but they haven't gone through that process where the brain has essentially activated the switch that allows you muscular control. So the feeling is that you are being held down, that you are incapable of moving. And this is often accompanied by hallucinations of some presence in the room with you, usually a malevolent presence. And throughout the ages, it has been interpreted as different things. So during the Middle Ages, it was often thought of as a succubus or a witch of some sort that would perch on your chest and hold you down in this experience. Modern day, it tends to be either shadowy authoritarian figures of some sort or aliens, something along those lines. And there are fewer more supernatural ones, although some people still think of them as ghosts or whatever. So Dead Awake, the premise of it is that the two twins end up suffering sleep paralysis. First, it's one who has had a troubled past, although I didn't get far enough in the movie to really learn what that past was. I just knew that she was supposed to be going to some sort of rehabilitation meeting. And then she ends up dying as a result of one of these incidents. At that same time, her twin sister experiences sleep paralysis for the first time. And then presumably this leads down some sort of supernatural story. But by that time, I didn't give a shit. It was not an interesting movie. However, it led me to a documentary called The Nightmare. And The Nightmare is actually a documentary about sleep paralysis. I started watching that. It's a documentary. They dramatize some of the stories that the people who have had these bouts, what they describe what it was like, and then they have these sort of reenactments. 100,000 times scarier than this bullshit horror movie. So don't watch Dead Awake, but definitely check out The Nightmare, because it's a really interesting subject matter. And they actually do a really good job of making the reenactments creepy. I mean, it's a reenactment and it's a lower budget sort of thing, so you got to forgive that. But just hearing people actually describe experiences they've had, and to them, it's extremely real in the moment. And it's having an incredible impact on their lives, because they aren't getting nearly as much rest as they need to. It is terrifying. So check out The Nightmare. It is a great documentary, or at least I thought it was a great documentary, and I would love to hear what you guys thought of it.
Well, I was looking up this Dead Awake movie, and yeah. I noticed the actors.
The one I've seen wasn't worth your time.
Right, I've seen the actress in something better than that, because I didn't see Dead Awake. But she was in House of the Devil, which was this movie done in 2009 or released in 2009, yeah. And it looks like this late 70s, early 80s horror movie. If you haven't seen it, it looks so bizarrely authentic that it's really good. And I've tried
it's a
Nightmare
satanic
myself.
Cult movie.
Yes, House of the Devil. You think?
Yeah.
Thanks for explaining the whole damn. No, you don't have to watch it anymore. Just don't.
House of the Devil could be a fucking demonic possession movie. It's not a demonic possession movie. It's a satanic cult movie.
Yeah.
Fuck you, IS. It's directed, by the way, by Ty West, someone I happen to fucking know. But go ahead.
Say,
go ahead, IS.
Wait a second. If you want to get upset, I didn't say, like, you don't know the director and you don't know the movie, which your response doesn't seem to match.
You're being condescending by acting like The House of the Devil automatically tells people it's a satanic cult film. It could be a demonic possession film.
No. Okay. That's okay. That wasn't the intent. Jesus. Welcome to the last episode I do here.
No, what were you saying about House of the Devil? It is a really good movie. It does look like, and it does look like it was actually made in the late 70s, early 80s. It has that feel to it.
I thought it was a good movie, and I thought Nightmare was quite good. I tried it. I didn't really care for the dramatizations, and I got bored of it early. It's good to know that it gets better.
I mean, that's fair. That's fair. Like I said, like the budget for the dramatic reinterpretations. Jonathan can't talk tonight. Yeah, I could see where that doesn't necessarily work for everyone. It might have been the fact that I had just watched something really awful about the same subject matter and just felt that this treatment was so much more effective. So it could even be that I was affected by a bad experience, and then something that was just not as bad seemed awesome in comparison.
Well, that's the thing. I've heard good things about The Nightmare before. That's the thing. That's one why I tried it, because I've heard a lot of people say good things about it. I just couldn't get past the dramatization. Also, I think I'd mixed it up with the Nightmare documentary on Nightmare on Elm Street, which is like 4 hours long. And I'm like, I can't watch this if this is 4 hours. It's only an hour and a half, guys. I was wrong about the documentary. The Nightmare on Elm Street one really is about 4 hours, and it's really good if you haven't seen that too. But that's something you just leave on and walk away from.
Have you seen The Innkeepers?
I don't think so. Eric, have you seen
it? Also, it's another film by Ty West, so that's why I'm bringing it up. So The Innkeepers, if you liked House of the Devil, you'd probably like The Innkeepers. It's got another kind of sort of a slow build of creepiness factor in it. So I like House of the Devil more. Some people think The Innkeepers is a far superior film. I liked House of the Devil more, but it's by the same guy. He also did a film called The Sacrament, and out of the three, that is the one I think is the least effective, I guess. The Sacrament is essentially a fictional retelling of the Jonestown Massacre, where everybody, you know, drank the Kool-Aid. Yeah. It's a found footage film.
Yeah.
Version. Yeah, it,
yeah.
I don't think it effectively says anything new or interesting about it. Which is upsetting because I knew one of the actors in that. He's also an actor who's in The House of the Devil, AJ Bowen. But I walked away from that movie saying like, that one didn't do much for me. But The Innkeepers and House of the Devil both are pretty good atmospheric horror movies. They are not done in the style of the loud noise, jump and startle you, but leaves no lasting impact. They have a little bit more going on for them. There's another horror movie that just got sold to Netflix called The Ritual. It's by David Bruckner, another Atlanta native who he did The Signal and a couple of other movies as well. He's also directed segments in VHS and Southbound. So I'm looking forward to seeing that once it comes out on Netflix. But that one just got sold for like $4.75 million, I think. And we were all real proud of Bruckner for getting that done. So that's pretty awesome.
I bought The Big Sick because I hadn't seen that yet. Did either of you guys watch that?
Yeah, I saw that. At Alamo. Yeah. And Johnny.
Yeah.
What'd you think?
It was great. I enjoyed it. I paid $15 for it. So like I was hoping, I was like, this better be good. Like, hopefully it's good. But... because now I own it. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. I don't know much to say because I don't have Pakistani parents, so can't relate on that front. But it was very good. Yeah.
Yeah, from what I saw, as a guy who has Pakistani parents, I was very much like, I cannot believe this is on the big screen at all. Because I watched it. There was a limited run at Alamo. I was living, not where I live right now. And I was just kind of just shocked to see these people that I've seen in my life, at least around my life, somewhat accurately portrayed on camera. And the jokes I was laughing at was, I'm in this audience, and I'm looking around, and I'm like, okay, there's not a lot of people like me here. And I'm laughing harder at certain jokes that other people aren't getting. And I'm just like, okay, this is quite authentic in certain ways. That that whole feeling of, or just seeing the parents worried so much about outward perception or perception by everybody else, that thing is extremely true. So that's why I have a law degree and I do this. So, but I'm not shunned or anything. I checked the boxes, right? Here's my bio degree and here's my law degree, and I retired, so I can do video. So that made them happy.
I have got to see that.
So Kumail
I've
just
heard
had
great
to get
things.
The law degree first, and then go to
college. Well, that's the first step, and that's how they can accept his career as a comedian or whatever he wanted to do at the time. But yeah, it's they won't accept it. They're just like, okay, just my mom. This is I'm not making this up. My mom has offered to pay my dues for the bar for the ABA, and I'm like, you don't need to pay this $100 a year. For these benefits, I don't need. I'm retired. I don't need it. So she said, but then you're not a lawyer. I'm like, it's okay. It's all right. I'm fine. Just fine. And I have my retirement pay.
I mean, $100 bucks a year for the peace of mind to know
bucks.
You're a lawyer. Oh, 600? I don't know, man. That's a bit much.
I was like, this isn't worth it, especially since I wasn't practicing.
Yeah.
Awesome. I'm trying to think of what I rented. I rented something on Amazon Video just the other day, and obviously it didn't leave much of an effect on me because I cannot. It was another horror movie. I remember that. It was one that, it was Lake Mungo. That's what it was. I had heard great things about a film called Lake Mungo, and I decided to watch that. And I think the problem was I had heard too many good things about it by the time I went to see it. And my expectations were too high. It was a good movie. I don't know, great. It was a good movie. It had some effective moments in it. But I think I knew too much about it before, or at least I had too many expectations about it before I actually watched it. Okay, but
I'm using a service. Yeah. You guys ever use realgood.com? This is not an ad. R-E-E-L-G-O-O-D, realgood.com. They're kind of like, can I stream it? So when you want to see where these things are streaming, you can put in a lot more services. You can tell it if you have HBO, if you have Netflix, if you have Amazon. Oh, yeah. Basically, you can really customize this thing. It even includes that TV Everywhere stuff. So if you have cable, you can be like, well, I have A&E and AMC and all this other stuff. And it searches through all of that stuff to find out where this is streaming. Innkeepers, like you had mentioned, is available on Shudder for like rental and purchase for like $3 or $8. Same thing with Lake Mungo is available on Shudder and Tubi TV. But Tubi TV is usually free, so you might want to take a look at that. So it's a really good site. They have an iOS app for phones only. I don't think it's on iPad. And they also have an Apple TV app. And it's better than the Apple TV actual app because that doesn't search Netflix. So it's pretty neat. Right. On your device, you hit like play. If it goes to Amazon, it'll just open up the Amazon app, which is – it's just a really cool little app. Definitely recommend it.
It's cute.
Yep. Yeah, and I believe it's free. So this is – a non-paid thing, realgood.com is freaking awesome. I like it, and I've been using it all the time just to find where these documentaries are because it's really hard to find any of this stuff online unless you have a predisposition to this crap.
It is getting increasingly frustrating at the splintered landscape of various streaming services and the different buckets of content that are available on each one versus across multiple ones. And it's just getting worse. And
especially because at this point, discovering anything on Hulu is horrible. The new interface.
Oh my God.
Oh, it's so, yes. It's useless. It's useless.
Hulu is one of the ones I don't subscribe to. So I have no, I haven't had any experience with Hulu since it went to subscription only, right? When it had the free stuff, I would occasionally use it to watch whatever. Like for a while, Hulu was the only place that had old episodes of MST3K or Riff Tracks, and I would watch that. Now all that stuff's over on Amazon. The only thing I know of right now that's on Hulu that I really want to watch, and it's almost enough for me to subscribe to it, is I finally want to watch Rick and Morty because I've never seen it. I know a lot about it, and I know how it's a very dark but funny show. But I've never seen it. So I've been tempted to subscribe to Hulu really just to watch that show. But I have next to no knowledge about what content is available on Hulu and only Hulu. And therefore I can't make an informed decision.
There's maybe like one or two shows that we watch. One of them is Rick and Morty, but that actually doesn't keep me subscribed because basically I put on Rick and Morty when like I'm up and Liz has gone to bed and I'm like, I still have some work to do. So I put that on.
Well, see, that's what Bob's Burgers is for me because I've got all the seasons of Bob's Burgers.
Right. Yeah.
Well,
the weird thing is their interface a month or two ago and it's just horrible. It's useless.
That's a really good point. The user interface, once they had that live television component, they decided to redo their Apple TV app. And that interface, whatever you want to call it, is now propagated to the Roku at this point. I think it was on Fire TV before. They had a couple of these staggered releases. And you have to have pick your profile. And then you can go in and it reorganizes things to make it easier for you to find stuff in theory. But practically...
It seems like they assume a lot of... Oh, there goes Zayas.
There goes Zayas.
It seems like they assume that you want to keep watching the same things all the time and that you don't necessarily want to discover new content. So it's just kind of useless.
See, this is also why I got irritated at Netflix for getting rid of the star system and going straight to thumbs up or thumbs down. Because the star system, for one thing, it was incredibly useful for this show. If we wanted to watch, something that we were guaranteed to hate, we'd just go on Netflix and look for the thing that had the lowest match for us. But that's no longer really an option because now it's just thumbs up, thumbs down. You now have this very blunt instrument. It's not precise anymore.
Yeah.
I really wish people would stop messing with their damn interfaces and their features because it's actually making these services more difficult to use than they used to be. And it's very frustrating.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there are lots of reasons behind it, behind the scenes, but as a consumer, it seems like everyone's making poor design decisions and inflicting them upon their user base.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I don't know. I design user interfaces every now and then, and luckily we do experiments. And yeah, the problem is that like what fits 90% of people and what 90% of people like is generally not what like I want. So,
right. And yeah. Anyone who is like a power user is probably going to be frustrated right. by the interface designed to appeal to the 90 percenters, right?
Exactly.
Or, yeah, it's fun
like
to
you,
do
if
A,
you
B.
want somebody to click a button, it's really easy to make them click a button. But like, you know, if you want to really dig into like search for movies or something like that, like Netflix doesn't want you to search for movies. Anytime you're not watching a movie is bad for them.
Yeah.
They want you to click a button.
And even using their various, like, their categories, right? Like, I often watch Netflix across the, using my Xbox One. I use that as my entertainment system. And so I'll pull open the Netflix app on that, and I'll go through their categories. It's one of the things you can do is look at the various genres of film. And even doing that, pulling it up, like pulling up their horror subgenre, I'll start looking through that and it won't even show me all the titles that are available on Netflix. Yeah. It'll show me a good portion of them, but not all of them, because if I go doing it some other way, other titles that did not show up in that initial list will pop up. And I'm like, well, I want everything that falls in that category to be available for me to peruse so I can, you know, pick whichever movie suits my mood the best. I hate all of those sort of weird decisions, and it makes me feel like they're doing A/B testing where they're like, okay, which of these makes you feel like throwing yourself in front of a moving bus the least?
Yeah. Right? I it was kind of funny because I just like logged in to find that Sharks movie and I noticed that they changed the, you know, display cover for a bunch of random movies that like I'd already seen the display, like Zombievers has a different icon. Netflix runs tests like constantly to see like which icon you're going to click on.
I don't know. I assume it's the same for just about all the different platforms, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong, but at least on the Xbox One now, the way, and actually this has been the case for a while, I shouldn't say now, when you are going through and scrolling through options on Netflix, whatever is currently highlighted, like you're not purposefully necessarily highlighting something, you're just kind of scrolling through. If you stay on it for any length of time, it automatically starts playing a little preview of what. Yeah. And with audio, right? And like, all I want to do is just read the titles. So now my go-to is trying to read the titles fast enough so that if I don't see anything I want in that first row, I can immediately scroll over before that video preview starts to play, because I don't want it to happen. So I'm just like, nothing, go.
Yeah. I've taken to muting when I start doing that. When I'm hovering, I'm like, I don't want whatever pseudo trailer you have or whatever preview you have. I just want to see what this thing is. And I'm not sure exactly what I'm looking at by the thumbnail. But back to Hulu, I know that Netflix is losing a lot of content and it looks like they're picking it up at Hulu. Like Bob's Burgers, as I know, Jonathan, you already own that, but that whole run used to be on Netflix and now is exclusively on Hulu. 30 Rock is disappearing at the end of the month at Netflix, the whole series, and it's not been told where it's going to end up, but likely it's going to be at Hulu, because Hulu's been just gobbling up a bunch of these different shows. Louis also leaving Netflix. There's a bunch of things leaving that I think is worth watching, but it looks like it's going to end up at Hulu, because they seem to be just padding out all their partnerships with their like owners. Like, hey, Fox, you got anything?
Yeah,
we got this for you. We've got Atlanta showed up, FX. Atlanta just showed up really quietly on the 15th. Season 1 is on Hulu right now. It's another reason, if you haven't watched that show, you should watch Atlanta. That's really good.
So let me ask you guys this, because I'm also not familiar with any of the original content. Now, obviously, Netflix original content is huge, and that's obviously mm-hmm. where the company is putting a lot of its efforts, right? So you've got things like Orange is the New Black, and you've got House of Cards, but you've also got all the Marvel subtitles, all that kind of stuff. Amazon also has a few, at least, notable original titles that I haven't really, like, I never hear about Amazon's titles being talked about at the same level as Netflix, but people do seem to like the ones. Man in the High Castle and Tick are the ones that my friends talk about.
Oh, I haven't, I haven't watched Tick yet. I should actually.
I haven't watched it yet because I've got so many things I'm behind on with Netflix. Like, I still need to finish season 3 of Kimmy Schmidt. I never finished Luke Cage. I need to finish that. Never even started Iron Fist. Haven't seen Defenders. You know, Punisher's coming out soon. And then there are several other ones that like Glow. I haven't watched Glow yet. And I feel like that's something I really should watch. Glow, I have a lot of friends who really liked it. So there's all those. I haven't even gotten over to Amazon to see The Tick. But I don't know anything. Like, does Hulu have any original content that people even care about?
I mean, the big one was The Handmaid's Tale, because that just won shit.
Was that on?
And I've been watching it.
Exclusive.
Yes,
it is. We watched the first episode. Like, Liz and I both read the book and then watched episode one, and I was like, I don't really need to watch it. But we just put it on because we were out of things to watch, so that was okay. The rest of them, I'm trying to think of other things. They've released a lot of crappy comedies that I wouldn't say anyone should watch, but they're good background noise.
Difficult People, I don't think is too bad.
It's fine.
I've seen
when, like, Difficult People isn't like a show that I would like tell somebody, oh, you should just watch it. Because they're not going to miss anything if they don't watch it.
The only thing I know about that is I've seen the little ads on Facebook. Like, it's one of those things that tends to be a frequent ad in my Facebook profile or Difficult People, probably because of the type of friends I have.
Yeah.
A lot of Difficult People.
It's kind of like You're the Worst if you haven't watched that show. I mean, if you've seen that show, you kind of know what this is like.
Yeah.
That's on FX, and that's a really good show. I think that's also on Hulu. That's not an original or anything, but really good. They have this show called Casual, which I hear really good things about. I tried to watch a couple episodes. I think Eric's right. Like, none of this is, like, terribly compelling. Like, oh, I really need to watch this. It's just kind of like, oh, this stuff's good. I will say, though, I really liked the show. It was called Behind the Mask, and it was a look at people who are sports mascots, and it's a documentary series. And I think there's two seasons of it. It's, I think, amusing to watch. It's interesting to watch. You're seeing what these people are trying to – what effort it takes to be a mascot, and you're seeing just the varying levels of commitment. They have professionals as well. So it's kind of a show that I don't think anyone would be like, I really need to see the show on mascots. But it's really well done. So if you want to see a documentary series, I highly recommend Behind the Mask. That's on Hulu.
Oh, maybe I'll break down. I'll take another look and see what other stuff is there and whether or not that would justify subscribing. Because I just, like, I don't watch that much already. I mean, nearly as much as I used to anyway. I often will just end up instead reading. I'm reading more content rather than watching series or anything like that. Yeah. But I do feel that part of the reason for that is just that I'm running out of stuff I care about on the services I am subscribed to. And even the stuff I care about, like, I need to be in a certain mood to be able to watch it, which is why I haven't finished Luke Cage, for example, because it's, you know, that's not a happy go lucky kind of show. And so I need to be in a particular mindset to want to watch it. And also, I know my wife wants to see it, but we have to wait until we're both in that same kind of headspace, and that doesn't happen all that frequently. So I don't know when I'll get around to adopting other streaming services. I did think of one other horror movie I watched recently that I really enjoyed, and I don't know if you guys have, either of you have seen it. I, as you might have, you like a lot of horror movies. Train to Busan.
No, actually, I've never heard of that one.
You hadn't? It's a zombie flick. Korean zombie flick. And it's set mostly aboard a train. And it's pretty good. It's a little heavy-handed with some of the emotional impact, but effective. And so a pretty decent zombie flick.
95% on the tomato meter. But they've got a total of 83 reviews. That's not bad at all.
It's pretty good. It is subtitled. It's not dubbed. It's on Netflix.
Oh, is it? Okay. I'm going to add that one. Yeah. That sounds good. I don't know when I'm going to be in a situation where I can just like literally stare at a screen without like being interrupted. But I used to watch a lot of subtitle horror movies. There was like The Host that came out years ago. And I think I rented it on Netflix DVD back when that was a thing. And I saw it. I'm like, this is brilliant and quite funny. And now I'm being bombarded with an ad for Fuller House, which is coming on Friday. Oh, good.
That's another psychological horror.
There's no real comedy in that show. If you haven't watched Fuller House, I don't recommend that. 9 episodes on Friday the 22nd.
That first episode of Fuller House really did feel like a very odd, dark satire of the original Full House series, except it was clearly unintentional.
I wish they went darker then. Yeah, because you got this widow situation. This whole show should have this like murder mystery tinge to it. Like, who killed DJ's husband? Because I think it gets in a car accident or something. But like, that's not explored much at all. And here's the weird thing. I've seen every episode. Every episode of this horrible show. I don't know why. This is like a sick thing. I just leave it on and I start working. And then like, you don't miss a damn thing. It's like, 200 to 300 levels below a Lifetime movie, and like how little your brain has to pay attention to it. Like, you could be in a coma and still follow this fucking show. But it's awful.
The first episode in particular is really hard to watch. The second one is slightly less hard to watch, but the first one it's painful in its fan service. And it's also smarmy in it, right? Like, it's like, here comes character. Here comes character's catchphrase. Here comes a look directly into the camera as we break the fourth wall and acknowledge how funny we are for referencing something that wasn't really that amusing that came out 20 years ago. That was a... I only watched the first maybe 3 or 4 episodes of that, but I tried to get through it. I just couldn't do that to myself anymore. And I kept thinking, like, if it had been purposefully done to be just a little worse than it was, it would have been brilliant. But instead, it just felt like kind of like a 90s sitcom, in that it was sort of a half-assed attempt to make a family-friendly, quote-unquote, comedy. I wish it just got a little darker and more twisted, because that family's fucked up, man. Like, the mom died in the original series, right? That's why they're being raised by just their dad. I don't think it was a divorce. Yeah. So no, that family's dead. Got this. No, there's a curse on. I'm breaking up.
There's a curse on the Tanners.
Yes, the Tanners.
And then she becomes DJ Fuller House.
Right.
And then it keeps going. And they all live together again. And then the neighbor's girl shows up.
Yeah, we had an episode where we actually had a better concept for Fuller House before it came out, I think.
I think you're right. I remember us talking about this once before.
Yeah. We've had this conversation before.
To be fair, Eric, it's been a while since we've done any episode at all.
It's true.
It could have even been the last episode, as far as we know.
It might have been.
Yes, the last episode was before 3 seasons of, or 2.5 seasons of Fuller House were released.
Oh my God, is it season 3 that's coming out?
Three?
This is season 3, part 1, 9 episodes being released on the 22nd. More episodes, 9 episodes in December for part 2. They say that the 22nd is the 30th anniversary of the first airing of Full House.
So, Ayaz, you're the reason for this. You're the reason. You kept watching.
Yeah, that must be it. keep it going.
It's your fault.
Here's the worst thing, though. I would suggest watching that thing over many of the things on Hulu that are the originals, and anything over Amazon. I'm sure Transparent is great. I haven't watched.
Fair enough.
I tried to watch Transparent a couple times. I'm like, this is too serious. I'm like, I'm not watching this. I tried to watch. I did watch The Tick, at least like about 5 episodes of it, and I'm not really giving anything away, but it's so much more serious than The Tick needs to be, which is fine. I get what they're going for, but like. You know, they also Amazon Prime. They do have the original 2001 Fox version of The Tick.
Yeah, I saw that.
The live action version, 9 episodes of it.
Patrick Warburton, still
perfect as The Tick. I really want to get the animated series back somehow so I can watch that because I don't know where that is. I haven't been able to find that anywhere.
I bought that on
That's
DVD.
Also fun.
It's I think one I bought like a DVD.
I think I have like an eBay like VCD version of it because like some guy just made a bunch of. Because like they're like VHS transfers. And I'm like, okay, I don't know if it's in here anymore. I probably got rid of it, but that's how I got The Tick, the whole series back then. That was more lighthearted show.
The only show I have like that, it's from the 80s. There were like 8 episodes total, something like that, called, and I may have talked about this on the show before, Wizards and Warriors. It was a fantasy comedy series that came out in the 80s. It's sort of had the same kind of tongue-in-cheek humor that you would later see in series like Xena Warrior Princess. Not quite as campy as that. Maybe, well, in some ways, just as campy as that. But more contained, I think, than Xena was. But very silly show. And it felt like it was Dungeons and Dragons mixed with some sort of campy humor type stuff without it becoming an outright comedy. But the DVD I have is clearly a bootleg. It's clearly someone taped these off the channel when it was originally airing, transferred it to DVD. The quality is terrible, but at least I have the damn show.
I've never heard of it.
It was on when I was a kid, so you would have been too young. Like I'm a little older than both of you. So both of you would have been too young if even alive when it was on. And I remember it because I was big into fantasy. Like that was the genre that I was drawn to once I started reading everything beyond like little kids' books. I just got into fantasy. I didn't much care for science fiction at the time. I loved fantasy. And so that was a show that appealed to me because it was all about, warriors and it's in the title, Wizards and Warriors, and they're monsters and ghosts and stuff. And the hero was Eric Greystone, and the bad guy is Dirk Blackpool. There's like no subtlety in this show whatsoever. Julia Duffy played the Princess Ariel, and it's was just a genuinely silly but fun show. So the only way you can find it these days is essentially a bootleg copy. I don't know that I could even tell you that it's worth watching. For me, it's worth watching, but it's partly because of nostalgia. I don't know if I saw it for the first time now, if I would even think of it as remotely entertaining. It's impossible for me to say because I have that connection to it from my childhood, and that might be the only thing that's saving it. But I actually really enjoyed it.
The one bootleg I remember having was like explicitly made as a bootleg was the Upright Citizens Brigade. That was it. Because they didn't release any of them on DVD. Like a couple years after it was done, I was searching eBay and of course found somebody who had all the seasons on DVD. And I was like, $3? Yep. And I got 4 burned DVDs and I enjoyed the hell out of them
Did it come with a case?
It had a case.
Covers?
It had a case. Yep. It was obviously printed off the dude's printer of just season 1 episode title. Yep.
the version of the Tick I got we had like the lowest res graphics, and you could tell it was an inkjet printer that was running out of blue. And you're just like, this is
like a teal.
Yeah, because it was the wrong color everywhere. And they're just like slapping on these bad PNGs with bad alpha channels. It was just like, okay, I don't care. I had the whole run of The Tick, the cartoon show, which I have now lost.
I got it as a Christmas present, and my guess is it was, I don't know if The Tick is currently available on DVD anywhere, but at one point it really was like legitimately available, and that's when my parents ended up getting it for me as a Christmas present one year. I don't, like, I'm very much anti-piracy. However, I'm also the person who says you've got to make stuff available for people to actually purchase if you don't want piracy, because for the longest time, like, there were a couple of different titles I had that I had pirated copies of it. And I eventually went out and bought the legitimate ones once they became available. But one of them was Battle Royale, which for many years was not available in the United States. And is, you know, that of course is the movie everyone says was the inspiration for stuff like The Hunger Games or PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, that kind of stuff. And it was a pretty effective movie and very edgy for the time. I don't think it would be considered edgy now, at least not nearly as edgy as it was back then. But it was that was one of the movies or one of the titles I had that was a bootleg. And then there was another. The other one was the television series Spaced. I downloaded all the episodes of Spaced and I burned them to CD or DVD so that I could watch them. Because you could not find it in the United States for a really long time. The only thing that was showing them occasionally was BBC America, and it was a terrible edit version of the show where you were losing entire jokes because they were editing it out for more commercial time. And the day that both of those became available in separate incidents, I went out and bought the actual copy because while mostly I wanted access to it and wanted to see it, I also wanted to support the shows or movies that I loved and indicate with my dollars, please keep doing this kind of stuff. I haven't looked, but if there were easy to grab copies of that Mitchell and Webb Look, which is a sketch comedy series from the UK, I'd probably get those because it is impossible to get here in the States. I have checked multiple times
for a while, wasn't it?
Yeah, all four seasons were on Netflix for a while, but they've been off Netflix for a couple of years. There are no region one copies available. It's all region two. So you cannot buy it for American. Yeah. Like, and I don't have a region free player, and I don't really want to go out and buy one just for that series. And I don't even have machines with optical drives on them anymore. So there's no use in that. I don't have a legal way of watching that content, although I would happily pay to do so. There's not an outlet for me.
I'm looking at The Tick on DVD at Amazon. The first season is $18, which sounds very reasonable. The second season is available for $199.34.
Wow.
So yeah, I don't know.
That's great.
It might be the only disc in existence, apparently, because there is nobody else selling it.
Because throughout season two, Arthur's just dropping dong through the whole thing.
Must be. That's why it cost $200.
It's also why you can't fly straight. It's a rudder effect.
On that note, it's time to look into the future. Next time on Podcast Without Pretense.
That's why I can't fly straight. It's a rudder effect.
So I'm watching Three-Headed Shark Attack, and then I'm shocked because there's a fourth head. Didn't see that coming.
Guys, I found a Hulu show you have to watch. Nah, I'm screwing with you.